On this episode of Get Real with Casey Kasem, I was honored to sit down with the fantasy football phenom and board game guru, Paul Charchian. Charch is known for all kinds of roles such as the Chief Execution Officer at GuillotineLeagues.com, Fantasy Football Weekly radio show host on KFAN, hosting duties on the Chop the Guillotine League podcast, and he is a two-time Fantasy Sports Hall of Famer. You can follow Charch on Twitter at Paul Charchian. Listen to our brilliant conversation to learn more about board games. Oh, and tips for the up-and-coming fantasy analyst, guillotine leagues and how they work, being on the radio, and much more. Follow me on Twitter at TheCaseyKasem. Follow the pod on Twitter at GetReal_pod. Make sure to check out my writing at both The Fantasy Footballers and Fighting Chance Fantasy. Proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will. And we will. And we will. And we will. Make sure you subscribe over there and check out all the pods on the network. Also, before we jump into the new episode, I wanted to tell you a little about this charity league I've been participating in this year. It's called Pros with Joes. Pairs up everyday fantasy players with industry experts to raise money for a bunch of great charities. For some reason, they decided I should be an expert, so there's that. This season, I was paired up with my dude Michael. We've had a blast co-managing our team, even though we just got knocked out of the playoffs. We're playing for Dallas Dogger, and you can help support their mission by donating over at proswithjoes.rallyup.com/trophy. Donors get entered to win dope prizes like premium subscriptions to their favorite fantasy sites, one-on-one coaching with a pro, podcast merch, and even a spot in the 2021 league. They'll be raising money through the end of the month, and every dollar goes a long way for all of the charities. Go get entered to win and help contribute to these great charities over at proswithjoes.rallyup.com/trophy. Without further ado, my interview with Charch.
Let's get you in here. Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Awesome.
good to see you and talk to you.
Yeah, for real. I was thinking the same thing. I was really excited to get to talk to you. So
that's awesome. Scott Fish loves you.
Oh, well, I love Scott Fish, so the feeling's mutual.
Everybody does.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Exactly. So how you been doing?
Well, you know, it's the grind of the football season, and, you know, if you're anything like me, I'm at the stage where it's been a long time to get here, but we're not quite at the light at the end of the tunnel stage. Yep. So it's, you know, it'll be better in like 2 weeks when at that point I'm like, oh man, it's just a couple of weeks left and you just sort of power through, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. I get it completely. Yeah. I'm like, oh man. And having like Wednesday day games and all this other stuff, it's just mind blowing.
Yeah, exactly. So what'd you do with your day job? If, you know, for this game, I mean, you're just stuck, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My phone, so we're not supposed to have our phones. So I did not have my phone. So there's that.
I get it. So I got to tell you about this funny coincidence that came up today.
Oh yeah.
I'm doing a crossword puzzle. My wife and I will like pick away at a crossword puzzle throughout the week. We get the Wall Street Journal on Sundays and we'll photocopy the crossword puzzle. And we'll just pick at it throughout the week. Today, one of the clues was Casey Kasem.
Oh man.
Yep. I answered with K-A-S-E-M.
There you go. Like,
what are the odds?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It was the
same day I'm talking to you.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Cool. Yeah. Super cool.
And I'm just so like, I told everybody with Fighting Chance Fantasy that I was talking to you tonight, and they were all so jealous because they're like the Godfather. So
wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just give me a little bit of your background if you don't mind.
Oh yeah, for sure. Let's see. I started playing fantasy football in like 2011. Mm-hmm. And that was just a redraft league that my friend was like, hey, we need somebody. I know you like football. Boom. There you go. Been a Cowboys fan my whole life. So yay. And then a few years ago, I'd say probably 2 to 3 years ago, Ryan from Fighting Chance Fantasy, when he was over there, Ryan Hallam, asked me if I wanted to write. And I was like, yeah, sure. So then I did that. And then now I'm with, you know, the Fantasy Footballers as well. But Yeah. I mean, I'm relatively new to this whole thing. That's why I started this podcast, is kind of just to get everybody to, you know, see that everybody starts somewhere and so on and so forth. But yeah, I live in Texas, close to Dallas. That's about it.
All right.
Nothing all fancy, right. Like all everybody I've been talking to. So.
Well, you know what? That's how we all started. I mean, yeah. I started in the 90s and mm-hmm. it was, it took me 3 years before I could do it full time. And even then, when I went full time, I was in IT and I was making $50,000, which was pretty good in 1994 or five. And I left it all behind to work on our magazine for mm-hmm. $16,000 a year. So, I think most of us ended up starting the same kind of way that you're starting now.
You just gotta jump into it now with Twitter and everything. It's so much easier to like get noticed and get your stuff through. You know, the internet, I guess, was a big game changer for fantasy football.
Oh God, was it?
You started back when there wasn't a thing called internet. So how was starting fantasy football in that time frame? How did that go for you?
Well, so I mean, it's when I tell people this, they're like, they think I'm lying or whatever, but there was literally nothing published on fantasy football once the season started, when we started the magazine in 1993. So there was a preseason book by Cliff Charpentier, and there were a couple of preseason magazines, and that was it. And so Buddy and I were just like, man, we really wish there was a fantasy football magazine that was in season. And so we tried it in the Twin Cities, a weekly magazine. And we ended up outselling Sports Illustrated. So we're like, all right, game on. So that was the first year. And then we rolled it out nationally the second year. And then eventually it turned into a website called fanball.com. And then it just, things happened. But it was super challenging back then. You didn't know how many people were playing, where geographically they were playing. You had just no way to interact with anybody, no sense of scale, no way to reach anybody other than just hope they see it on the newsstand, And you're right. Now with Twitter, there's just so many more avenues mm-hmm. than there ever were then. And there's so many more players too. So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's blown up, but I can't even imagine back in, the 90s when it was, on its come up and like doing that and trying to figure out were you ever worried that you were putting out this content and nobody was going to actually like go after it?
That happened. So yep. What we found out is, I'm in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. What we found out is the hard way. So, so we put it on the newsstand and it's a huge success in the Twin Cities. We're like, oh, okay, so let's just send it to every NFL city. So we're sending it everywhere across the country. And it's super expensive because it's time sensitive material. So we're like, we're next day airing these heavy boxes of magazines all around town, around the country. At extraordinary expense, and only to find out nobody's playing in the South, nobody's playing on the West Coast. And you don't even know that, Casey. The way the magazine business works, you find out 6 weeks after the off sale date of your magazine how it sold. And so we didn't even find out that we weren't selling anything in these cities until halfway through the season. And so we took a huge financial loss that first year, and it almost sunk the company, only to find out where people were playing were these cold weather cities. Primarily is back then. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know that Minnesota is a big mecca for fantasy football. There's a lot of analysts and a lot of players that come out of Minnesota. Have you been in Minnesota your whole life?
Yeah, most of it. When I was a kid, we traveled around a little bit as my dad changed jobs. We were in upstate New York and Memphis, but I've been here since fourth grade. So yeah, quite a while.
Yeah, I've never been there. We were gonna go. One of my favorite rap groups is from Minnesota, Minneapolis. Atmosphere. So, yeah. Well, Atmosphere. Yeah, I love Atmosphere too. I like Doomtree and Atmosphere. So those are my Minnesota kids. we were gonna go up there for some shows, but all this COVID stuff happened. So
Well, I hope you do. When you do, we'll get Scott and we'll go have fun while you're in town.
Super red. Oh yeah. I'd be about that.
I would love that. And if they end up playing, I'm connected to some of the venues in town. So you know, when the time comes, we'll see if we can we can set you up in some way.
That'd be dope. Yeah, I've never been to Minnesota. My wife worked up there for a little bit. Then the stuff
Where?
Happened. A town that I have no idea. Scott said he had never heard of it. So
oh wow, okay.
So from the airport. So
okay, all right. So it wasn't like in the Twin Cities.
No. Oh, she had to drive a little bit of a ways. So yeah, he was like, I've never heard of that town before in my life. I don't even know what she does for a living. I don't know where she was. I know I was at home. That's all I know. So to go back to something that you were talking about earlier was Fanball. How did that come about? I know it started in the late 90s and everything, but how did that idea progress from just what you were previously doing to then doing that?
So we got the magazine and mm-hmm. we're publishing, you know, we're publishing the magazine every week. And at the time, so the way, just as a little, I'm trying not to bore you here.
No, you're good.
To get the magazine to Phoenix by, so it can be on the newsstand by like Wednesday. So then people could buy it like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday before the games would kick off. That meant that we had to print it Sunday night overnight and then get it out to the airport to get FedExed on Monday. So it gets to Phoenix on Tuesday and then it's out on newsstands on Wednesday. So to do that, the way it would work is we would pre-write the whole magazine the week before the Sunday games. And then we'd watch the Sunday games. And this is before DirecTV. So we're watching like CBS and Fox, and I'm connected to CompuServe and Prodigy, just trying to get box scores and stuff because you couldn't even get that stuff, and trying to glean little nuggets what was happening in all these games. And then we'd edit the whole magazine on Sunday and out the door would go. And at the time, to have anything written in the same week that reflected what happened last Sunday was considered, you know, like, you know, that was new news. But once the internet came around, and now to fast forward the timetable to like 1998, now our magazine's starting to feel a little bit stale by the time people get it because they're used to getting news a lot faster, and you can obviously update the internet on a moment by moment basis. Mm-hmm. And so when the huge influx of cash came, we were able to, when the .com cash came in like in 98, we were able to raise $10 million in about 10 days.
Wow.
Because it was easy then. Mm-hmm. And so we raised a bunch of money and we started fanball.com and we coded a commissioner program and a bunch of games and a bunch of other things. And then .com, you know, the bottom fell out of the .com market, as you know. And the company went from 55 people down to 12. And that was really, really hard. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I can only imagine that whole change. So you've seen so much change in fantasy football from when it started to like where it is right now. What do you think is the coolest thing, I guess, that has happened in that time frame to fantasy football?
Well, okay, I'm going to give you two answers, a personal and a professional answer. The professional answer is the internet, because everything scaled and went berserk, right?
Right.
We were still scoring by hand and on spreadsheets. This thing just never would have scaled. Mm-hmm. So the internet professionally, personally, just what I love is how more sophisticated we all are as players. And that's everything from, you know, now we have sophisticated scoring systems. We have weird ways to play. People are just so much better players now than they ever were before. There's so much more information that's available. So just the sophistication that has come with all the play has been, it's just been awesome. And to see how smart everybody's gotten about football, God, it's just, it's incredible. Just everybody is so smart about it.
It's crazy.
It is, isn't it?
It blows my mind, the stuff that I see come across my timeline or like articles that I read. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I'm with you. I feel the same way. And you put a ton of time into your work and I put a ton of time into mine. And then there are people that just know, you know, they've really focused on ADOT and, you know, they're brilliant ADOT minds. You're like, God, I could never put all that time into ADOT.
Yeah, I never. I would never want to. I'm glad there's people like that that'll do that for me. You know, and there's only so much I'm going to do. But I mean, you do everything, right? So tell me a little bit about being in radio. And that's a different kind of thing than what's going on now, really focused on podcasting and stuff that people are about. Yeah. And I know that your radio show is available on podcasts, but how has radio been for you, the start to now? Like, with fantasy in mind.
So back in 1995, well, 93. Well, so beginning in 93, we start sending our Fantasy Football Weekly magazine to our local, our on-air local, we have a local radio station, KFAN. And so we're sending the magazine to them. And in 94, they start having me on as a guest once a week. And then the problem they were having is people would just call into the show constantly asking fantasy questions. So this was the early days of talk radio. So people would just totally break format. We'd be talking about the Twins and people just call up and go, hey, who should I start? You know, Emmett Smith or I don't know, whoever. And so they were breaking format all the time. So eventually the PD came to me and said, will you just do a show on Saturday mornings so that we can tell all these people to stick it and you can just call on Saturday mornings? So in 95, we started a show that was basically just call us and we'll answer questions. And for 2 hours, all we did was just take calls. In time, we figured out that if I'm answering Casey's question between should I start guy X or guy Y, I'm really not helping anybody other than Casey for the most part. And so we really switched around and turned it into a non-caller driven show over the course of years. And now we've been on the air 26 years, Casey.
That's cool. Yeah. That's so cool. I love it. And your show gets brought up a lot when we're talking about like,
really?
Yeah. When I talk to people about like, before I started the podcast, I'm like, who should I listen to? What should I listen to? And your name got brought up a lot with the radio show. Yeah. Wow.
That's amazing. Thank you.
No problem. I'm trying to get the hang of this because I've never done it before. So it's like kind of a brand new like world for me, I guess. and I'm like, let's swing for the fences. Let's get charge on. So, you know, that's what I did.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now you lured me in with promise of board game.
Oh,
talk.
Yes. We're going to hold off. This is a little bit of a spoiler for everybody that's listening. We will get to the board game talk. I know that's why you're here.
That's right.
But we'll get there. I promise. It'll be worth your while though to listen to all these stories. Like I love talking to you guys that have been in the industry for so long because I get so much knowledge about stuff that happened when I was like, I don't want to make anybody feel old, but I was
five.
Like, yeah, no, I was born in 84. So, you know, right. Like, but no, it's really cool to see how everything's progressed. And I know you have the Guillotine Leagues.
Yes. I know you know what? I said it the first when I came up with the name.
Yeah.
I said it wrong.
Yeah.
And my staff had to be like, it's guillotine, not guillotine. It's guillotine.
Yeah. I'm like reading it right now because I got it written down on chicken scratch, and I'm like sounding it out. I'm like, no, that's not right. I know what it is, but yeah. Well, yeah. You have that going. And I just want to know more about it because I know that you guys have .com and you have all that fun stuff. And it's really awesome. I've never participated in one, but I was listening back to old episode of one of your old episodes of the, CHOP podcast that you guys have?
Yeah, the CHOP podcast.
To try to get an idea because everybody's like, you should play in these types of leagues. They're really cool. And go ahead and sell me on it so that I'll, you know, join a couple.
Next year you're next in next year, year. We're gonna sure. make it happen for I'm gonna sure. have a bunch I'll have a bunch I mean I have one expert league this year you were I'm gonna have many and you're in okay awesome. So here's how the Guillotine League works.
All right,
you start with 17 teams at the beginning of the year and there's no head-to-head. At the end of every week, the low scoring team from that week is cut and older players go to the waiver wire. So now at the end of week one, you've got a whole roster of players to bid on. It's not just the injury replacements and stuff like that. It's great players. You've got $1,000. We use $1,000 caps. So you got $1,000 to spend over the course of the entire season. And so the real strategy is when do I spend my money? Is my team so bad that I have to spend it early and I got to spend big money to go get Alvin Kamara after week one because he had a bad week one and now here he is in the waiver wire? Or do I try to save it because every week better and better teams get cut because the teams all get better. They're all acquiring players and acquiring players and acquiring players. And so I'll give you an example. You know, today teams just got cut in my league. I'm just going to find one randomly that got cut today because it all just went down.
Crazy.
I know. So the kinds of teams that end up getting cut, this is Mike Dempsey is a guy who's in one of our leagues. And well, maybe that's not, I mean, I shouldn't use his as an example. Let's use this one. Okay. So here's the team that just got cut this week. Quarterbacks are Tom Brady, Lamar Jackson. The running backs are Christian McCaffrey. He's been cut many times. Alvin Kamara, Stephon Diggs, Justin Jefferson, Chase Claypool, Allen Robinson, Antonio Brown, Mark Andrews. Wow. I mean, that's the team that's so now those guys all hit the waiver wire and we're bidding on those players. So the teams, by the time, what makes the Guillotine League so fun, Casey, is this totally new strategy. And man, if you're around by like week 10, you've got a team you can never get any other way. The team that you get now is awesome. The teams you're going to war with at this point. And you never, we're down to four teams left now. So, you know, you can only imagine from 17 culling the best players from 17 down to four. The rosters are crazy.
That sounds great. I mean, you named all those guys off that are on the waivers, which are guys that you never see on the waivers, right? So that's right. That's totally awesome. And it is. So, I'm like, dang, I wish I had that league. I wish I had that team on my redraft team or on my dynasty league or whatever. And it's like, geez. And so, yeah, the other rosters must be stacked if those guys were let go.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. If that's the losing roster of the week, right?
That's crazy to even think about. Like, yeah, I'm going to definitely have to check that out. Everybody that's listening, you guys have to check that out. Get in some leagues with me next year. We'll have fun. I love that. I love when new ideas come out. You know, people push me to play Dynasty, and now, like, I've been playing Dynasty for a couple of years. Yeah. But I still have a soft spot for, you know, DFS and redraft and all that. And I can always add another format to that.
Because it's so different. And if you're like me and you're in way too many leagues.
Yes.
Once you get chopped. Way too many. Once you get chopped, you just, all right, it's done. And you don't have to give it any more thought. And not that you will get chopped.
Well, I mean.
Yeah. You'll be the last woman standing.
Always, right? I do a lot of those eliminator leagues that Bosch puts together for, during the Scott Fish Bowl. And I know that's not the same thing, but I do like I don't have to pay attention to it after I'm done. I don't have to sit there and be like, I'm already in last place. I'm going to not be able to get out. I just have to blow it up and start over. But yeah I love that. What makes you, what makes your mind go that direction? Like, I'm going to do that. How did that idea come to you?
Well, I'd like to say I invented it, but I didn't. Somebody on Twitter tweeted me this format and the light bulb was just instantly went on. I'm like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. So I did a test. I rejiggered Fanball's commissioner style program to work Guillotine Leagues last season, the 2019 season. And I'm playing it and the feedback I'm getting is awesome. And I'm having a great time. And I did a survey at the end of the year and people were freaking out. And so I'm like, okay, I've been doing this 27 years or whatever it's been. I've never had a response to anything I've ever done on any level that's like Guillotine Leagues. And so I got to go all in. So just fired up the site, dedicated, really pivoted my whole career towards this format because I'm just that convinced. That, and I know that people absolutely love it. So yeah, that's in fact, I'm going to give you. So again, we just chop teams, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Here's the tweets that I'm getting in the last hour that from people who have been chopped, right? So these are the people who have felt the sting of the blade, right? All right, so here's what I got. Had I known, I might have been ready for this.
And maybe I'm sorry.
Maybe this is all too self-serving anyway. But,
no, I love hearing this stuff. It's like really getting me amped for next season already. I'm like, let's go.
I got too many things to wade through, unfortunately. Here's one as an example. I lost by 3 points. Here's my chopped lineup. This is a tweet from a guy named J.R. Toledo. Here's my chopped lineup, which is good. It's the most fun I've had in years. He had 5 near-death experiences and couldn't get to the 6. So your near-death experience is when you're one away from the chopping line.
Ooh.
Right? So we total those up. So this guy had made it that long. Yeah. Anyway, so it's, yeah, that's the format. Just every now and again, you're going to, Casey, you're so young. You're going to find these opportunities in your life where you have this chance to just pivot to something that you just, your heart's just in.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I've done with this. And you're going to have opportunities like that too.
Well, that's super awesome. I had TJ Hernandez on last night and we were talking about DFS a lot because he played the online poker before going into DFS.
Yeah.
And I was like, sweet. Now I have someone I can talk to about a whole new type of fantasy league that like not even a lot of people know about. So it's really cool that you put it out there and people were hardcore about like, yeah, I want to play that. That's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
What kind of advice do you have to people that are in leagues that they don't find to be super awesome? And they either want to like get out of the league completely or they want to like bring up something to the commissioner to kind of spice things up. What do you, people that might be afraid to like speak up?
So very broadly, people don't leave leagues enough and people don't kick other people out of leagues enough. Mm-hmm. If your league doesn't kick ass, if you don't have a lot of great owners, there's not a lot of great chatter, you don't have an awesome vibe, you know, if you're not getting and receiving trade offers, just leave. Life's too short.
Yeah.
And it's just people get into this mode like, well, I'm in, I should stay in. But my feeling is if you're in a dud league, man, you're depriving yourself. You can only be in so many leagues. You're depriving yourself of so much fun. I think you should get out. And for commissioners, you got dud owners who don't participate and, you know, don't advance it.
Out. I don't know what to do though. Some of them are my best friends.
And I'm like, I know, it's hard, right?
I called this girl out though, a couple days ago. I was like, hey, you're not invited back to the league next year. And I don't know if she thought I was being serious or I was joking, but it was a little bit of column A, column B.
Well, you can, you're right. I mean, you can not threaten, but you can be like, Hey, listen, here's the deal, man. We're trying to have a great league here. And you know,
we'll figure it out. Right. It is one of those learning processes though. Becoming a commissioner and then like, as it progresses, you know, learning tips like that, like get out and stuff to the people that are actually playing in leagues that are kind of during this whole time period right now, we're dealing with, you know, COVID and everything. So it's a completely different time for fantasy football, real football, life and everything else. How do you think COVID has affected the fantasy football just in general, like the playing, the community, everything?
Yeah, it seems to me that we weeded out the casuals who were like, man, I don't want to play this year. You know, there's going to be too much change. The season's not going to happen. I think the people that just don't love it. Many bailed. And the people who love it, you know, they're playing and having a great time. And as it turns out, you know, you've been rewarded for it. It's sure. There's been tons of drama.
Oh yeah.
But you know, you've been rewarded for it.
I think we're joining more leagues because we have all this free time.
In some cases. Yeah.
Jump in. Exactly. I mean, yeah.
What do you think? Well, tell me what you think. What's your observation of how COVID, you don't have to have done this for 25 years to have a sense of what COVID this year has done.
Yeah. I mean, I have talked to a lot of people in the industry and not in the industry, just like the regular peeps that love fantasy football. They're just not, you know, a part of the writing or podcasting. And a lot of the people that I've talked to are like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for this season to be over, which is kind of surprising to me, but I also kind of get where they're coming from because it has been real, you know, up and down this whole entire season, not knowing what's going to happen. I think that the people that are hardcore degenerates that are like super into fantasy football probably ended up joining more leagues. I know I did. So I think that maybe even if they're just best ball leagues or whatever, and I know that I'm playing a lot more daily games as well, because my rosters on some of my rosters are complete trash and it's not my fault. I drafted well, but they got hurt, you know, or COVID list or whatever. And so I think the daily fantasy stuff is just like kind of cool for those of us who are like, well, I can't blow my roster up and start over, but with daily, I can, you know, at least try to set some lineups with guys that are healthy. I don't know.
No, I agree. This has been a compelling year to do daily. And that's, I think for people who had a predilection for Daly anyway, perfect year for it, because you just don't have to worry about all, you know, all this, you know, all the same stuff that those of us in season long have to.
Yeah. I don't know. I am seeing a whole lot. I think I'm seeing a whole lot more content come out now, and there's a lot of these newcomers to the scene coming out now. What kind of advice do you have for those people that, like, right now are just on the come up and they're just like trying to get themselves out there? They just don't know where to start.
You're doing the right stuff. To me, it's about creating good content and then sticking with it. There's there's so many people that have started a website or a podcast, and they've got a lot of enthusiasm for a certain number of weeks, and then the enthusiasm wanes and they don't get all the traction that they want, and they give up, or, you know, life happens and they just, you know, they had planned to do it. You know, they said they were going to do it every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but then, you know, something happened on a Wednesday and they start skipping the Wednesday, and then they start skipping a Friday, and then pretty soon the whole thing unwinds. So, you know, in some ways it sort of filters out the people that are really committed to it. But hopefully people that want to get in, just make great content, tweet smart, you know, make smart tweets and ask for help from people that will give it. And especially in the off season.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the great time to ask me for help, but if you ask me in, you know, February through June, there's a good chance that, that I can spend time on whatever you're doing. So yeah,
that is so valuable.
Yeah. I just be persistent, make the best content you can, and don't give up, and ask for help.
It's awesome. Being able to like reach out to you and reach out to a couple of the other guys and gals in the industry that, you know, have been around for a while or just have like a strong following or both. It's just really cool when I can reach out to you and you're talking to me. You're actually talking to hi, I'm this little person over here and you're talking to me. But it's so cool because I've been able to talk to a lot of you guys, and you tell me, you know, we all started off, you know, in the same realm you are, so on and so forth. And that's the truth. And I think that if you have an audience, whether it's small or big or in between, like, you've got people who care about what you have to say. So if you want to listen to me talk, then come on with it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So, okay. Can I go one level deeper and just say, okay, then, so you're creating content. Is it good content or not? Well, you don't know very well because, you created the content. So hopefully you can find people that are willing to give you honest feedback.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a writer, somebody who's willing to edit your stuff and really help you through an editing process. If you're doing a podcast, somebody you can really listen and give you critical feedback and, you know, figure out who are the people you can leverage, even if it's just friends and family. It doesn't have to be experts in the field. Just other people who play, you know, can you listen to this and tell me, is this helpful? Am I, you know, is it entertaining? Whatever your goals are.
Right. Yes, exactly. And I think you said entertaining. How important do you think it is to, like, especially on podcast and radio and everything, to have that entertainment factor to go along with the information that you're providing fantasy wise?
Well, look at what the fantasy footballers have done.
Mm-hmm.
There's your case study right there. You know, I believe that people don't want to think this is the case, but they want secretly a ratio of about 70% entertainment and 30% of actual insight and data. And what most people give them is much closer to the opposite of that, because it's hard to be entertaining. And what the fantasy footballers have been able to do is to be brilliantly entertaining. And it just so happens their content's really good too. Mm-hmm. But if they weren't so instinctively funny and the production values weren't so high and it wasn't so entertaining, they just wouldn't, if it was just about the knowledge of their head, they just wouldn't have gotten to 1,000 episodes. It just wouldn't have happened. So I think, you know, and this is true of almost all entertainment mediums. It's just people want to be entertained first and foremost. And they, you know, if you ask them, they won't say that, but that's actually what they want. That's the stuff that sells and has longevity.
Yeah. And it appeals to everybody. It'll appeal to the common, you know, I just play in one league kind of person and the people that are in a ton of leagues. You know, you want to hear a different spin on things. So it's, I agree with you on that. And that is a great example of somebody that, you know, a podcast to look at if you're looking to like try to figure out what to do, you know, what to do. And I know with you, I mean, you have to, you don't have to, but you choose to talk to people on a daily basis a lot. Did that take you a while to get comfortable with, or was it something that you like automatically could just jump into and there you go?
Well, if you're talking about Twitter, I mean, I do have a lot of back and forths on Twitter, with people, and that's my usual, like sort of one-to-one, you know, conversations with people. And, you know, we do, you know, I've got the radio show slash podcast, but you know, that's me talking, people listening. So that's not back and forth.
Right.
I think a lot of it is just who you are and what your comfort level is, Casey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you like talking to strangers? You know, do you like interacting with strangers? Is it, oh, are you okay interacting with somebody who's opinion you don't like, or somebody who's just not that sharp or whatever? And mostly just my personal bend on humanity is, Casey, I think people are mostly good people, and mostly I think people want to help each other. They will do good things if given the opportunity to do good things, and they'll do right by each other. And I just like humanity, and I like interacting with people. And so, you know, for the people that are nice enough to follow me on Twitter, I like most 99% of my interactions. And if I don't, you get muted and you never know.
Yeah, right. That's one of my favorite things to do. My sister says she listens back to this podcast, and when I'm talking about trolls and stuff, she'll be like, you say you don't interact with them, but I see you on Twitter interacting with them. I was like, yeah, but then I mute them, and then they don't have anybody they can, you know? So like, but I do appreciate the listen. I'm going to go back to talking about a couple of, I want to talk about the auction leagues. How was FanBall the first site to offer something like that?
We were the first site to offer in-season blind bidding.
Uh-huh.
We were the first magazine. Fantasy Football Weekly was the first magazine to ever publish auction values. And we published a mock auction. So we believed in auctioning way. So this is 95. We published auction values before anybody else put an auction value on a cheat sheet. And I'm very proud that we did it first, and that I had to spend 10 years in all of our preseason magazines just explaining what an auction is and how you physically execute an auction.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had to do that. And, you know, just because it took so long to get people to embrace it.
Yeah. It's another thing that I just recently like started in the last couple of years doing. And I'm like, why weren't we doing this all along? You know, so, is there anything that's come about that you didn't personally like have your hand in that came about in a format that you were like, whoa, that wasn't something that you were like hardcore into, but somebody brought it up and you're like, whoa, that's a game changer right there as well.
Well, DFS, you know, I only wish I had thought of DFS and had been an originator on that. So yeah, that'd be the obvious one for everything that DFS did for our industry in many good ways, mostly good, plenty of controversy and bumps in the road.
Yeah.
I was the president of the Fantasy Sports Trade Association for, 11, 12 years during all the craziness with DraftKings and FanDuel. And, at the end of the day, it all turned out great. I mean, now look, I mean, you know, FanDuel got acquired for whatever, $30 million. DraftKings is now a, you know, billion-dollar publicly traded company, you know, those, you know, and it's all turned out okay. And we're all still playing, and it didn't, you know, wasn't the end of fantasy football like some people thought it might be.
Yeah. I remember that whole like period, and I was like, and then, you know, states getting taken away and not being able to play DFS, and, you know, cause I'm in Texas, so I didn't get to play it for a while. And I was like, whatever, you know, now nobody can keep track of what states allow it and what states don't allow it.
At least
you're putting out a product that everybody can play and have a good time with.
I also play state by state, right? So if you have a private league, if Casey's got 16 friends, you can join a guillotine league from any state. But if you want to play in a cash contest style, then, you know, then I'm state by state as well.
And people need to realize that it's not you guys' fault that they can't play. It's their, they need to talk to.
It's a state, right?
Yeah. They need to talk to certain people about that. You brought up the Fantasy Sports Trade Association, and I know that you said you were the president and everything, and you were there since the inception of that. Is that correct?
Yeah, we were, you know, FanBall was one of the founding members of the FSTA.
And what kind of things did you learn from being the president there? And how easy, difficult in between was it to handle all that for 11 or 12 years?
Well, it grew a ton. So, yeah. you know, from, you know, we started this in the late 90s. It was a slow moving thing. And then DFS hit. Yeah. And I think pre-DFS, we had probably 80-ish companies. And then at really the peak of the DFS craze, we had 400 companies in the association. It was so easy to raise money then that all these people got into the DFS marketplace. And, you know, they raised a bunch of money. They spent a bunch of money. And at the end of the day, nobody could beat FanDuel and DraftKings because they did it first and they did it well. And then, you know, things have started to recede after that. Those people got filtered out and we stabilized in the association for quite a while. And then we decided that we were so adjacent to gambling that we should really expand the association to do fantasy and gambling. Mm-hmm. And so now the association is split evenly in priority between the two.
Gotcha. I know a couple of people are, you know, a little shady, like saying, or a little taken aback by saying, oh, gambling and fantasy football are connected. But I mean, at the end of the day, there's no way around it. They kind of are, you know, if you're putting money on the line for something.
There are key distinctions between yep. fantasy and gambling, game of skill, yep. game of chance. We're not the house. Fantasy isn't the house, right? You know, you're not playing against the house. This isn't like blackjack
exactly.
where the house is keeping your money. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, in whether it's DFS or guillotine right. leagues, you know, we are basically a matchmaking service.
Yeah.
That takes, you know, they were a matchmaking like service for a profit. We, you know, Casey wants to play in a guillotine league, but doesn't know 16 other people. This there lets Casey go. Come play on our site. We find the 16 other people and we're a matchmaking service. So we think there's some key distinctions
yeah.
between gambling and fantasy.
Yeah. The big stuff the you know, that you guys have completely separate, of course there's the overlap of a few things, but the, you know, matching people up, like you said, is really cool. How important do you think it is to like have people in your league that you are actually at least can, you kind of know about versus like going into a league blindly with people that you've never met, talked to or anything like that? Do you think that there's an importance there? Or do you think that you'll all learn, come up together and it'll be dope? You know, just dope.
Well, you know, I'd always rather play with friends, right?
Yeah, I mean, right.
I want to do everything with my friends.
But you can't get it, convince them.
You know? Right, you know, but I might not have 16 friends yeah. that want to join a guillotine league. So it's, you know, that part can be tricky. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think anything, I'd rather play with my friends. Look,
right.
Let's go back to board gaming. Well, actually, our first trip to board gaming.
We're going to go to board gaming, yes.
I love cooperative board games.
Can yeah, you? Really.
You know,
me too.
Like Pandemic is an yeah. example. And the first time I played a truly sophisticated cooperative game, Pandemic, mm-hmm. you know, my mind was blown. I'm like, wow, you know, we're all working together as a team. And I just, you know, I love to compete with my friends, sure, but I also love playing with my friends, and I just like the social interaction.
Yeah,
that comes with all that. Yeah, gaming with friends can't be beat.
And how do you feel about live drafts?
Well, I'd always rather live draft.
Yeah, you know, I'm just making sure that yeah. you know, some people are like, I've never done one. I'm like, you need to do one.
Yeah,
and you will like it. Okay, yeah. So you brought up board games. So we're gonna do a little bit of a board game section of the podcast. So if this
awesome.
Is what you were looking forward to, flag it. Make sure you're looking at the time, and you can go back and listen if you need to. Okay.
Everybody else is checking out. They're like, oh,
they're like, we're done. Guys, board games are so awesome. If you're not playing board games, then you're doing it wrong. You can do both.
It is so true.
You can play fantasy football. You can play board games.
Have you seen the shirts or whatever that say, no, not like Monopoly?
I have not.
Because that's what everybody thinks when you're like, oh, man, this is really great board games.
Well,
you're like,
yeah.
No, not like Monopoly.
Yeah, there are plenty of games that are definitely not like Monopoly. Not to say I don't have Monopoly, but I don't like to blame Monopoly.
No, Monopoly sucks. If Monopoly really came on the market today, it would come and go with a whimper. Nobody'd yeah. buy it. It's terrible. There's so many brilliant board games.
Oh my gosh. And this is why we have you here for board game talk with Casey Kasem in charge. Here we go. So first I'm going to kind of tie tie football into board games, I'm going to give you a player. This is a game. I don't do games, but I'm going to do one real quick.
All right, thank you. That sounds great.
Just like, you know, just a few. I'm going to give you a player, and then you give me the board game equivalent to that player.
Oh, man. Okay. All right.
So if I say Julio Jones, for instance, what game do you think is a Julio Jones type of game?
Julio Jones would be... Julio Jones would be Mansions of Madness because he's so frustrating. You want to play him every week, but you can't because he gets hurt. And then he tries to play through the injury and then he leaves after the first series and you're stuck. So I will take Julio Jones is Mansions of Madness.
Okay. You guys heard it here. How about Carson Wentz?
Carson Wentz. Horrified. The game Horrified is it's a cooperative game where you try to foil the sinister plans of classic movie monsters like Werewolf, Invisible Man, Creature of the Black Lagoon. And not only are we horrified by Carson Wentz's play, but he's been the Invisible Man in our fantasy scoring. So I think it works on two levels.
That's awesome. And I've never heard of either of these games, so it's really cool.
We're going to up your board game.
I know. We have so many board games, but it's like we play the same, like, three, and then I keep buying more, and then nobody wants to play them. I'm like, please play them with me.
Oh, man.
If only I lived closer to you, then.
I know. Well, when you come to Minnesota.
When I come to Minnesota, definitely. How about Travis Kelce?
Travis Kelce is, let me see here. Dominion.
Okay.
Because it's got domination in it. He is so much better than everybody else at his position. I mean, he's the biggest position aid, right? He's got the biggest position differentiation of anybody.
Right.
You know, the next bit that's number two tight end. Darren Waller, like half as many fantasy points, right? Yeah. So, you know what else would be good for him? Ticket to ride, because he will give you a ticket to ride to the championship.
That is, how about that? I love that. That is actually, I couldn't come up with a better one than that. Travis Kelce, do you think in drafts in 2021, do you think Travis Kelce is going to be one of those guys that moves up into the first round? Like, if he wasn't already there, do you think he's going to be one of those guys because people see him as a game changer? Or do you think that, second, third round, if I can get him there, then that's probably where I'm going to get him?
I think he'll go about where he went this year, end of first round, beginning of second round. Yep. But the reason why I think he stays at that high level, and he should be, absolutely should be, is how many people over the last 5 years have been burned by tight ends?
Like, yes.
Everybody.
Everybody.
We go into Sunday bracing for two catches for 20 yards or whatever tight end stiff we have if we don't have Travis Kelce. So everybody who's been burned looks at Kelce all year long like, oh, man, if only I had Travis Kelce. And one of those people, you know, pick seven, rolls around. They're like, God, I'm just taking him.
I'm just
getting a solve at that spot. We all think, you know, I maybe not all, but most of us, we all think, Casey, we're going to find that tight end that's going to help us in the late rounds. That's actually going to be great. You know, how many people thought Higby, you know, who coming out of that great December last year was going to be fantastic. And we all think we're going to get that tight end in the eighth round. Who's going to style us all year. It almost never happens.
No, it doesn't. And I know there's a big argument like tight ends and kickers, like they don't matter. Was there ever a point in time since you've played fantasy football for so long? Was there a point in time when tight ends actually like.
Yeah, we're good.
That's a great word.
Right. I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, they're eight deep in good tight ends.
Yeah.
And also I think, you know, I'm thinking of the heyday of Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates. And I'm sure I'm not thinking of all the great tight ends of that era, but in that time frame, I'm telling you, you know, you could have the eighth best tight end and you were in pretty good shape. Right now, if you got the eighth best tight end, you're going to war with, let me see, who would be the eighth best tight end? The eighth best tight end, you're trying to make do with Dalton Schultz.
That's who I thought it was going to be. Dallas. There's another one, Jarwin. There's another guy you thought, I'm going to draft him and later, and that didn't work out for you either.
What, did we get one game out of Blake Jarwin? He looked good for that game, though.
Oh, yeah, he did. And then Schultz came in, and it was like, okay. I mean, and then whatever. I'm not even going to talk about this team this year. I don't even want to.
Well, your team beat my team in the game. You shouldn't be trying to win, and we needed that.
Yeah. I am not in charge, because if I was, that's a whole nother podcast, I think. let's go back to talking about happier things. Let's go back to talking about board games for a little bit longer. You know what? This is a place for you guys to come and talk about stuff other than fantasy football. So poo-poo on me for bringing up Travis Kelce in fantasy. I don't want to do that. This is where you talk about stuff other than that, just kind of like a little, like, you know, spa retreat for fantasy football purposes. Board games. Okay, what's your favorite all-time board game?
Pandemic Legacy. Are you familiar with? Are you familiar? Well, let's start here. Are you familiar with Pandemic?
No, my sister's talking to me about it all the time, but I have not played Pandemic.
So for some people, it hits a little too close to home. But players work together, spanning the globe, and attempt to eradicate four killer pathogens. Everybody's got a slightly different role. And these pathogens are spreading throughout the globe, and you've got your operatives trying to contain the pathogens and ultimately find the vaccines to stop them. Okay. And it's super fun, and it's cooperative, and it's great. Then it's a pandemic's a multi-million seller. Then the guy that created it and another guy created a variation of Pandemic called Pandemic Legacy. Now, there's a whole variation of games called legacy games, and here's what's fascinating about them. At the end of every game, instead of you just like putting everything back in the box and the next time you replay, you're replaying the same game, instead it says, okay, at the end of game one, I want you to open secret compartment 7 and look behind flap G, and you will get new rules, new pieces. You will write on the board. You will tear up cards. Characters will die. And the game changes every time you play it, and it tells an ongoing narrative. That's how these legacy games work. And Pandemic Legacy was the first, it was the second that ever came out, and the first that really did it on a really, really great scale. And it tells this fascinating story. You still play the game, and the core rules of the game don't change, but they'll become more sophisticated and they'll twist and turn every time you play it. And because you get to affect the decision-making in it by writing on the board and changing your characters and stuff like that, it's personalized for you.
Okay. Well, I think I need to check that out. I look at it and all my board games are like cheap. I go to, Half Price Books and buy my board games and stuff.
Half Price Books is a great place to go for board games.
Yes. Yeah. It's like board game crack over there. It's like the crack house for board games. I'm like, yes. what game do you think is the most overrated game? I know we talked about Monopoly.
God, Monopoly is just the worst. Can we talk about how bad Monopoly is for just a minute? Let's drill down on
this.
There's only one strategy to win.
Yeah.
Which is to buy everything, every space you land on.
I thought you were going to say, don't be drunk. Be sober.
That's the one way to make it enjoyable, I think.
Yeah, I know.
Or, to turn it into a game within a game and be the banker and see how much you can steal. So there's only one strategy. It's predominantly luck based, just on dice rolling, right? So there's no real test of wits and skill. Mm-hmm. And then also you're playing with four people. Casey gets knocked out in 40 minutes. The rest of us might be on a 3-hour slog fest, and Casey's just standing around. It's Monopoly's the worst.
I will agree. My friend brought over her version, which is the one that you have the credit card, but I don't care. I don't care. Then we took a picture of where we ended so that we could come back to it. I don't want to come back. I don't want to come back to it.
Can that's a sign. So, that is a sign.
That's now why I try to buy as many as I can so that we can play something else besides Monopoly.
Good for you. The opposite of the 3-hour grind is 5-minute dungeon.
Okay.
5-minute dungeon is a speed-based card game in which everybody works together to defeat monsters and bosses. It's just total pandemonium because it's speed is of the essence. And what'll happen is you'll have cards in your hand and I've got cards in mine and we're all working together. There might be four of us. And the dungeon is producing like monsters. And to kill the monster, you got to have like a sequence of cards, like two blues and three reds. And the blues and reds are like, you know, they have different like abilities or whatever tied to them. But at the end of the day, they're just colors. And Casey throws in two blues. I throw in a red. Somebody else throws in a yellow and we can defeat that monster. And then there are mechanisms for drawing cards. And you have to just try to kill. You have to try to get to the end of the dungeon in 5 real time minutes. And it's a sprint and it's so fun. And if you get to the end of the first dungeon, you can go to the second dungeon, but you have to get to the end and kill the boss at the end of the dungeon in 5 minutes. It's a blast. It's so much fun.
It sounds like it. I'm going to write all these down. I'm going to come back and re-listen to this when I'm editing it. I'm going to be like, yes, because I think for Christmas, we're going to do a lot of board games and stuff, which is a great idea, guys. If you want to, I know that Tarch has all kinds of board games that you can recommend to people. When I was looking for games to play as a group or games to play two players, you were like, here's this list, boom, right here in your face. I went and bought some of the games that are on there. I don't know if we've played them yet because they always want to play the same three games, whatever. They want to play Skip-Bo or whatever. I'm like, whatever.
Man, we gotta up your game.
Hey, I've got games that I like to play and I'm a big word game person.
Word
games.
Yeah, so great.
I love games, but the problem is nobody else does.
Yeah. Part is tricky. So there's a really good cooperative word game called Letter Jam, but you need like 5 to 8 people to play it. But it's a cooperative word game and it's my favorite pure word game. I would try to explain it, but it doesn't work very well to try to explain it. Other than to say you'll have a letter in front of you and you that you can't see, but everybody else can see. And you're creating words to try to help each other figure out the letter in front that you've got in front of you that you can't see. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
But you know what? I love board games, so I'll go look into it.
All right.
Who knows? It might be my new favorite.
Letter Jam.
Got it down. Do you have a favorite board game that people who are listening could play with, not just, you know, their husband or wife, but like with the whole family?
Yeah. So, I love family gaming. I game with my family all the time. Cooperative games to me are always best because here's why. The cooperative games, if you're playing with a family and especially you've got kids, you're an adult, you know, you're at a totally different skill level. But if you're playing cooperatively, it doesn't matter the skill levels. The skill levels don't make any difference now because you're working together and you're helping each other. And so first, I recommend cooperative games as a general. And we mentioned Pandemic already. Mysterium is a great art-based family game. I mentioned Horrified earlier, which is a great cooperative game. 5-Minute Dungeon is a perfect family game for anybody who's like 7 or 8 years old and up. But I'll mention another one that is not cooperative that's a great family game. And it works for literally all ages. I played it with 8 people in their 80s, maybe not 90s, but it would still work. The game is called Dixit, D-I-X-I-T.
Okay.
It's an artwork-based game that's perfect for people who aren't like strategic thinkers. You know, a lot of these games work better for strategic thinkers, but Dixit isn't about that at all. And the premise of Dixit is, It's extremely simple game, but it's a little bit hard to describe. The game comes with about 100 beautifully decorated, illustrated cards. And the gist of it is you need to describe one of your cards in such a way that other people can find it out of a random group of cards, but not everybody can find it out of a random group of cards. So
like
you have to describe it just well enough that some people can find it, but not so well that everybody can find it. And it's a brilliant game. Dixit, highly recommended. Most of the games I'm talking about are available at mass retailers like Target or Walmart.
I love those type of games. I love playing. We've been playing lately a game called Blank Slate.
I don't know that. What is it?
It's like you basically, it'll be like blank ball and you have to put a word in front of it. And what you're trying to do is write a word down where you can match with somebody. You get 3 points if you match with one person, but if you match with multiple people, you only get 1 point. You're trying to be clever, but not too clever, you know?
It's so similar. That's like the word version of Dixit.
Yeah. So, I've finally got people to want to play that with me. So, I mean, they're better cards than what I just said. Like, you can't put me on the spot and make me come up with something. But, yeah, it gets kind of weird. And then you see everybody, like, putting whatever comes to their mind first. And I would have never thought of that, you know? It's pretty fun.
That sounds great.
It is. And so I think that's one of the board games or the word games I can actually get people to play that. And we play a lot of Telestrations. Mm-hmm. That's fun. But I definitely go to you as a resource. And if anybody, I'm sure he would give you, you know, all the information you need and more about board games if you ask him. I'm sure you would.
you'll get the doc. Yeah. I've got a doc that's got all my, it's got like my 30 favorite board games in it and something for everybody. So I just keep updating the doc every so often. And anybody who asks for it on Twitter, I just hand it off.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'd put it out on Twitter or something and everybody was like, you know, adding you like, hey, give her your list. So that was it. And then I was like, all right, I don't need any more information from anybody else. I've got the cheat sheet right here. The golden cheat sheet.
I like it. Board games. I like it. Awesome.
You're into video games too, right?
I have a video game radio show.
That's what I was going to get into. I wanted to hear a little bit more about that as well.
Well, it just happens that the best selling or widest distributed video game magazine is called Game Informer and it's located here in the Twin Cities. And I've become friends with the Game Informer people and eventually decided, hey, we should do a radio show for video games on my sports talk radio station. Because Casey, you know, for the demo of sports talk, what's like the nearest adjacency of interests? Video games. So about 10 years ago, we started doing a Tuesday night video game show. And I remember when we first turned it on, it was all the feedback was like, you nerds, get off the air. Nobody cares about video games. Go grow up, act your age. And now here we are 10 years later. And really all we have to do is just sort of show up and go, hey, you know, here's what's new in video games. What are you playing? What do you want to talk about? You know, here's some reviews of great games. And next thing we know, the phone lines are full and we've burned an hour and the show's over. So I just enjoy video games. I'm just an enthusiast, but I've got a co-host who's just so plugged in and plays everything that it makes it really easy. And it's a fun show. I love it. Now, do you play it all?
No, I have a PlayStation 2 and a Wii. I was super amped though. I got the PlayStation 2, like right when it came out with like my first job money. I was like, I want a PlayStation 2, and that's my DVD player now. No, I wish I did. I really do, but I don't know if I could find the time to even.
You know, right? It's so hard during the football season. Yes. You know, you work all day, you know, you're working every night, and then you don't have time to play. So, I hear you.
But like, if I ever go over to somebody's house and they're playing, I'll be like, yo, I don't know what I'm doing, but let me try,
in.
Right. Yeah, right.
Now again, co-op video games are awesome and so much fun. And so, you know, we could do a whole other thing on that, but those are the ones that I love for casual players. They could just sit down and we could play together and we're not, me expert player versus Casey, who's super casual and getting her ass kicked. Yeah. That's not fun.
And do you like to go to like arcades and stuff?
I did growing up. I mean, there's hardly even any arcades in town anymore, you know?
Yeah, we just got a new one like right before COVID was like.
Oh, bad timing.
Yeah, bad timing. So, but they're still doing all right. They're still staying afloat. And then we have a cidercade so you can drink your ciders and play your video games.
I like that.
Yeah, it's
like
pretty dope too. So, yeah, I just I like taking my dad when he comes into town to like some of those so he can play Galaga and stuff. And yeah,
all that shit. Yeah. I take my dad. We have a pinball place.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, they've got like 20 pinball machines and beer and hot dogs and, you know, sort of gourmet hot dogs. Mm-hmm. And that I take my dad there about twice a year because he grew up on pinball.
Yeah.
And so he loves it. And he's just blown away at the pinball machines that are out now because they're so sophisticated, you know?
Oh, yeah. I love playing pinball. When I was little, when I used to go, my parents were in a bowling league and there was an arcade connected to the bowling alley, you know, right there. And they'd just give us a bunch of quarters and tell us to go play. And I'd be on the pinball machines like the whole entire time.
I love it. Yeah. I think that's great. And there are people like, oh, you're wasting your time. But
it's fun and it's nostalgia and it's, you know, it's like, yeah, let me do what makes me happy.
right. You know, and why not? And it, as it turns out, you know, it's $100 billion industry. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I know the PlayStation 5 just came out and everybody's like punching each other to try to get that. And
yeah,
there's all that stuff going on. Well, 'tis the season. I think pretty much, you know, I could talk to you about a million other things. I know I hate ending shows, but I usually go keep it around an hour or so.
Oh, it's perfect.
You know, just to keep it so that everybody listens, you know, and they get a lot of board game talk and guess what? They're going to love it. And they're going to be like, you should have him on more often so that at the end of the podcast, you have a board game segment. Maybe we'll start. I'll have you upload a little something every now and then. But no, this has been a blast. I really enjoy talking to you and I haven't gotten to do that one-on-one before. So
it's yeah, really cool. I've really enjoyed chatting with you as well. Thank you for all the nice things that you said over the course of the show. And I'm wishing you the best of luck with your career in fantasy. I hope I hope it's long. I hope you end up doing this full time at some point, that you stick with it and you keep going on the path you're on, because it's a great path.
Well, I appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you, especially like the godfather. Would you go ahead and the floor is yours if you want to plug stuff, talk about whatever.
Go ahead. I'm good. Really, we already talked a lot of guillotine leagues, yeah. And you know that story. Yeah.
Go join the guillotine leagues next year. That's everybody's homework. Is you guys got to get on that.
I'm here to talk to you, not about mm-hmm. me. This wasn't about, you know, trying to find 5 new customers or 500 new customers.
Right.
It's about just getting to know Casey a little bit. So
yeah. I'm getting to know you. I like the back and forth. That's why I love this format of this kind of podcast, because you do all the work for me, basically. Like I have notes written down and then you hit them and I'm like, sweet, I don't even have to ask because you already touched on it. So awesome.
Perfect. Perfect.
But yeah, I appreciate you coming on, and you're going to have to come on again once I recycle, you know, go through a couple more people and then we'll get back to you and you can come on and talk about more board games. They'll be there.
Put me in the rotation.
Gotcha.
We'll have a ton of fun. And even if it's the off season by then, there's always stuff to talk about.
Dope. All right. Well, I appreciate it. And you guys and gals who are out there listening right now, make sure you go and check out everything. I'm going to link everything at the beginning of the show. I'm going to talk about it too. And then we don't have to talk about it anymore because, you know, nobody likes plugging their stuff, really. We're just here to talk. So until next time, we'll talk to you then.